Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. continues to rank among the top podcasts in Christianity. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will help make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today. If you're one of those people who, at least politically, feel like you don't have a home in 21st century 2021 America, you're not alone. There are people on both the right and the left who are, well, they are sensing that they're in exile from the extremes of the right and the left politically in the United States. Can they find common cause with one another? Are there some basic, and here we're talking very, very basic things that we can agree on? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about building bridges and alliances during polarizing times, Josh Pauling. He's a high school history teacher, elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and author of a 2-part series for Modern Reformation titled Building Bridges to the Parallel Polis. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you again, Todd.
You say that there are a growing number of exiles from both left and right. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that if we survey the current political landscape, there are many people who are realizing the shortcomings of their own camp or their own side, if you will. They're seeing that they don't really fit neatly into what we might call the left or the right. And, you know, to a certain extent, using such terms left and right to begin with is overly simplistic and maybe hasn't been the best way to think about political and social matters to begin with. I'm thinking here of the Founding Fathers and their warnings about permanent political parties. Maybe they were onto something years ago with that. But nonetheless, it is the system we have, and many folks are sensing that they don't fit neatly into the boxes created by our binary political system, especially in the last year or so. If we think about this past year, it's really exposed the dark underbelly of both sides, and it's not been pretty. For example, if we think about the events of last summer, justified frustrations about the unjust death of George Floyd, in some areas of the country, that developed into violence, and many folks who would consider themselves on the liberal side of things took a second look at where the left might be headed. Was the answer to be found in doubling down on racial categories and looking at everything through the lens of race? Well, some on the left said no, realizing that the liberalism they valued was being replaced with something else, something quite illiberal, actually. And similarly as well, we could look at the events of January 6th, which functioned as a wake-up call to many on the right. Is the answer to be found in doubling down on political outcomes, in a death match to be won at all costs, even breaking into the Capitol? Well, some on the right said no, realizing that the principles they valued were being replaced with something else as well. So in both cases, especially this last year, we've seen individuals maybe coming to realize that they don't really fit in fully with one side or the other. And I think the term exile really captures that. They're sort of exiles from their own side, but they also don't fit into the other side fully. And so the question is, where is the place for these exiles?
How do you explain the almost cult-like behavior and thinking on the right and the left in America's politics today?
I think what we are seeing is the outworking of what happens when ultimate importance is ascribed to politics. I like to call this eschatological politics, right? It's very easy to fall prey to, especially when prior sources of meaning are no longer what they once were. Eschatological politics easily fills the void left by declining religious commitments, shrinking economic opportunities, and eroding social institutions. It's almost as if the political has ascended to become apocalyptic or eschatological. And this is seen on both sides. For the left, politics is the last hope to usher in a better world. And for the right, politics is the last chance to prevent its destruction. So in both cases, it's like an all-or-nothing battle. And I think calling it eschatological or apocalyptic helps us think about that. There's a lot of books being written about this. Joshua Mitchell's American Awakening unpacks the religious dimension of our politics exquisitely. You could also maybe look to a philosopher like Rene Girard with his scapegoat concept and the religious dynamics there. But personally, I think the 20th century thinker Eric Voegelin is very good in this regard in his insights into cultural and political matters. Voegelin was a very prolific scholar who really honed in on politics and culture and had a wide experience. And he was very attuned to the dangers of religious or eschatological politics. He personally witnessed the rise of many of the 20th century ideologies, the rise of fascism in Italy, communism in Russia, Nazism in his German homeland. He wrote vociferously against the Nazis, and eventually he exiled to America, where he continued his academic career and wrote a lot about that. And just to summarize his basic argument, he was arguing that modern societies, in one way or another, were attempting to replace the final judgment, the eschaton, which is wrought by God ultimately, replacing that with utopian visions wrought by humanity. And Voegelin saw this as a long outworking of trends, really ever since the Middle Ages, away from a transcendent God and an ordered creation towards a very imminent universe with no destiny outside of human existence. And he said that the result of this is, quote, self-salvation, where man assumes the role of God and tries to redeem himself. So I think we really see that with this cult-like behavior on both sides. When religion declines, we by nature are religious creatures, and we will find other things to fill that void.
How is this behavior and thinking contrary to a Christian way of seeing and interacting with the public square?
Right. So if you think of Voegelin's insight there, that politics has in some ways become eschatological, where we're trying to bring about the kingdom through our political actions, whether on the right or the left, that is really not the Christian view of the world and the two kingdoms and so forth. The kingdom isn't achievable right now if we just pray the right prayers or implement the right policies or defeat the right enemies. It's also not achievable right now if we burn down cities or riot in the Capitol. All those efforts, whether they're in our current context in America or previous historical iterations of this, they ultimately fail because it's really a confusion of categories, right? An eternal transcendent kingdom is not brought about through earthly means. It's a confusion of category that really is the problem here. And we like to critique the left for doing this, for trying to bring about sort of a perfect world through utopian visions of progressivism. But really, it's also a danger for anyone who puts too much importance on politics. And Voegelin had a phrase for this: don't immanentize the eschaton. Lots of big words there, but basically, don't try to bring about the eschaton in the now. That human efforts in the now to bring about the final eschaton are ultimately doomed. And so we as Christians need to remember that ultimately the Christian eschaton is not brought about through political means. It's a totally different category. And so when we see conservatives who are sort of taking on a religious tone to things, we need to be careful. And we saw that a lot this last year with a lot of Christian churches and conspiracy theories that were claiming to have revelations from God or other anonymous sources or whatever it might be. Those are not the ways to bring about the kingdom. That's an earthbound political religion. That's not Christianity. And we need to make a clear distinction between the two.
What in particular has driven exiles from the left?
Right. So there's a lot of folks who have come forward, especially in the last few years, who would have been historically considered on the left or liberal. But what they're seeing is the rejection of liberal principles from folks on the left. And when I use the word liberal here, I'm meaning the broad sense of the term liberal, right? Where we're talking about human rights and individualism, limited government, the rule of law, things that are captured in that original root word, libera, which means free in Latin. And so many folks on the left have come to see that progressivism in its extreme forms is not really upholding those liberal principles. Maybe two specific examples of this would be specifically with critical race theory and gender ideology, two areas where some liberals have sort of stood up and said, no, I'm not going to go along with these things because they are not liberal in the broadest sense of the term.
What is the parallel polis?
So in the piece, I use this concept of the parallel polis to talk about where these exiles might go, exiles from the left and the right. And this is a term that really was first coined during the Cold War by Václav Benda, a Czech dissident who resisted communism and develop networks for the arts and intellectual life and communication and more, sort of all under the surface of a communist regime. And it became very important for Christians, for atheists who didn't go along with communism, and everyone in between, people who didn't fit in with the totalitarian system, to find ways to have a meaningful life and to survive. And so Bendit coins this term, the parallel polis, to describe what he was seeing unfold sort of organically within his own country and with other countries behind the Iron Curtain. So it's really about creating viable alternatives to mainstream life. Maybe cultural, maybe economic, maybe intellectual, maybe political, maybe religious. It really depends on the specific scenario. And this term is something that listeners may be familiar with from the work of Rod Dreher, right? With Benedict Option in his more recent book, Live Not by Lies, he talks a lot about this concept of the parallel polis, and he's done amazing research into these Cold War dissidents who lived this out in reality. There have always been groups that have participated to a greater or lesser extent in certain aspects of society. So the idea of the parallel polis is really about creating resiliency, about finding ways to sustain meaningful living. It might include simple things like growing your own food, self-employment, learning a trade or having a productive hobby. Really any way that we can create resiliency and viable alternatives to mainstream life. It's not about being separate or heading for the hills or anything like that. It's about being prepared for whatever comes. And really, in that sense, it's a scriptural motif, right? If we think about one of the ongoing motifs of what it means to be Christian in the world is the idea of the pilgrim, right, or the exile. It's very much a scriptural theme as well.
Josh Pauling is our guest. We're talking about building bridges and alliances during polarizing times. He's authored a two-part series for Modern Reformation titled Building Bridges to the Parallel Polis. When we come back, some examples of left and right finding common cause. Justification, the means of grace, the theology of the cross, Christology, vocation, living in two kingdoms, and worship. Dr. Gene Edward Veith covers each of these teachings in the new third edition of his book, The Spirituality of the Cross. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Spirituality of the Cross, 3rd edition, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
St. Paul Lutheran School of Hamel, Illinois is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're looking for a first and second grade teacher for the 2021-2022 school year. We pay 100% salary scale for the Southern Illinois District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Other benefits include full health care coverage, retirement and disability, and continuing education assistance. We'll even cover your relocation fees. For more information, send an email to jeff@issuesetc.org.
Christian greeting card makers, gift shop owners, laser cutters, church banner creators, ornamentalists, poster purveyors, jewelry designers, fine artists, hymn writers, wood carvers, UV bed printers, and authors all love Issues Etc. And you'll find our work at adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Ascension of Christ Lutheran, Beverly Hills, Michigan. Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. Hope Lutheran, Sunbury, Ohio. Messiah Lutheran, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. Redeemer Lutheran, Los Alamos, New Mexico. St. John Lutheran, Palina, Iowa. St. Paul Lutheran, Irvine, California. And Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Building bridges and alliances during polarizing times is our topic. Josh Pauling is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Some people inhabit only the secular realm, rejecting anything spiritual. Some people inhabit or try to inhabit only the spiritual realm, condemning anything worldly. Lutherans teach that both are realms of God. This is not dualism, as an accusation some critics make, but God, who is both creator and redeemer, is their point of unity. Christians must function in both realms at once. This can be in the world, but not of the world. An excerpt from the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Spirituality of the Cross, 3rd edition, by Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Call Concordia Publishing House and order this book, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for The Spirituality of the Cross, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Josh, give us some examples of exiles from both the left and the right finding common cause.
So there are many specific examples. I'll give you a few here. And with each passing day, it seems like there are more that we could list. The ones I focused on in the piece, one was Barry Weiss, who was a former New York Times op-ed opinion editor who resigned in July of 2020 because of what she called an illiberal environment there. And she has continued to write on Substack and other outlets, really putting forward this position of somebody who's been sort of exiled from her side, the left. She's a great voice to read and consider. Another example I mentioned in the piece is a professor from NYU named Michael Rechtenwald. He was at one time a Marxist who was really imbibing in these ideas in the realm of literature, which was his expertise, and has come to oppose these things. He's written several books. One of the most interesting, in my opinion, is The Google Archipelago, which is a play on Alexander Solzhenitsyn's classic book, The Gulag Archipelago. And in the book, he talks about this digital web of big tech and government authority that seems to be unfolding. We might also mention the work of Helen Pluckrose and James Lindsay with their book, Cynical Theories. These are individuals who are of the left who have spoken out against the rise of this very woke form of progressivism. The list could go on, but those are a few names.
What do exiles on both the left and the right generally have in common?
So as I was researching for this piece for Modern Reformation and thinking through what we might be able to build bridges about, I really came up with three things. And if we think about people who are sort of exiled from the left and the right in their modern forms, one of the things is the importance of speaking truth. When politics becomes eschatological, as I mentioned earlier, truth no longer really matters. It just becomes an all-out battle to win. And if truth gets in the way, well, truth gets in the way, and it needs to be overcome with something that fits the narrative. And so this has happened on both sides and is an ongoing problem, to be sure, but maybe especially in this last year, those things have been magnified. And so exiles from the left and the right see through this and want to speak the truth. And speaking truth is hard, but it's inherently powerful to speak it. And here we can also find great inspiration from these resistors to communism, like Alexander Solzhenitsyn and Václav Benda, who I mentioned earlier, and others who, through the long nights of suffering under communist regimes, were sustained by the conviction that living in truth is never in vain, that the truth will eventually win out. Another thing is that exiles from the left and the right understand the dangers of othering, of demonization, where we categorize people as good or evil, or sheep or goats, or children of light or children of darkness. That's very dangerous to do, to have this very dualistic or Gnostic construction that turns the world into this gigantic sort of blame game where everybody ideologically fits into these categories of good or evil. And this language has worked its way into politics the last few years on both sides. And I think here we need to remember what I think is one of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's greatest insights from the Gulag Archipelago, from behind barbed wire, where he suffered for years. He was able to say that, you know what? I could have very easily been the person on the other side of the barbed wire who's torturing me. He realized that human beings are not all good or evil, but are a mixture of both. And a Christian view of human nature as fallen certainly fits with that. But here's what he said exactly. He said this, quote, "If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?" Right? We need to understand that, right? And as Christians, we do. We're simultaneously saint and sinner, right? We need to exercise epistemological humility that we don't get too caught up in thinking that we are always right just because we're on this side or that side, that our own nature is corrupt and our own understanding is limited. And Solzhenitsyn really is helpful with that. And then lastly, the third thing I think exiles from the left and the right can work on together is the necessity of downgrading politics. Politics has just become too important. And when it's the end-all be-all, no one really wins. It turns into this game of survival. And historically, Christians especially have recognized that politics is ultimately something that's a subsidiary to other more important aspects of society, family, community, and church. And so we need to realize those three things: speaking truth, realizing that nobody's all evil or all good, and thirdly, limiting politics or downgrading politics.
Describe, if you would, what you call the new realists.
So I try to come up with a term in the piece to describe these exiles from the left and the right. What might be a term that captures who they are and what they stand for? And so this is my term, describing them as realists. It might not be the most precise, maybe it's a bit clunky, but I think it captures something important about this combination of voices that are in exile from the left and the right. They want something real. They want something objectively true, something that will withstand scrutiny. So realists are those who view the world as an objective reality with inherent meaning, in which humans are situated as embodied, contingent beings. So that's sort of what I mean by realists here. And I think many people who have realize they don't really fit in on either side could be categorized in this way.
How is the realist view different from the constructivist view?
So I contrast the realist view with the constructivist view, and constructivists would view the world as maybe a conglomeration of relative meanings, constructed meanings that are subjectively experienced by individuals. And individuals would be seen as autonomous, self-determining beings. And so you see on one side here, realists who say that the world has inherent meaning, objective meaning, in which humans are situated within it as embodied beings, and constructivists who say that meaning is subjectively constructed. So constructivists would posit that knowledge of the world and the self is subjectively constructed by the individual. We would see this at work in many things in the educational system, where constructivism plays a central role, in gender ideology and in other theories involving race and so forth, where that becomes sort of the central identity category. And then in distinction from that would be the idea, again, of a realist view.
Are we seeing any result of the common ground shared by the realists?
Yes, I think we are. I think we can see some of it in the willingness to work together amongst some of the names I mentioned earlier. Many of those who are sort of being exiled from the progressive left are willing to converse, to write together, to share the stage together with conservative Christians. We see this with Helen Pluckrose and James Lindsay with their book Cynical Theories. Both of the authors of that book are by no means Christian, but they're willing to have Christians write on the sites that they manage. James Lindsay manages New Discourses, and Helen Pluckrose was the editor of Ariel Magazine. And both of those magazines really are trying to have a dialogue between different viewpoints. James Lindsay as well, who has published a book defending his atheism, has also presented alongside Christian ministers and was recently on Al Mohler's Thinking in Public. We also see on Substack, this new emerging non-traditional media source called Substack, which is a subscription model to follow writers that you like. We see many of them working together from different perspectives. And so I think those are signs of what might be coming. And we need to be aware of those things and harness them. As a teacher, I'm looking closely at what's happening in the realm of education. And there are some groups that are emerging right now that are trying to form coalitions around what I said before, this realist approach. One such group is called FAIR, F-A-I-R, Fighting Against Injustice or Racism, something like that. And also Jonathan Haidt's Heterodox Academy would be another example. There are several groups that are trying to form to fight these issues.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. When we get back, we'll continue our conversation with Josh Pauling on building bridges and alliances during polarizing times. And we'll talk about the potential pitfalls of bridge building between the right and the left realists.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our way through 1 Corinthians with Stewards of the Mysteries, a spectacle, admonition, removed, and Christ our Passover. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
Do you struggle with technology? Do you struggle with its hold on your life and you wonder whether or not you're spending too much time on your devices or what this has to do with your faith? How do you use technology in a faithful way that is faithful to our Lutheran confession? Well, this question and many others are answered in the May issue of the Lutheran Witness, Seek First the Kingdom of God. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness. That's cph.org/witness. Or visit the Lutheran Witness website at witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At Our Savior Lutheran Church in Winchester, Virginia, you will hear God's Word faithfully preached every Sunday. We invite you to join our growing family of believers this week and every week for Education Hour beginning at 9 a.m., followed by Divine Worship at 10 a.m. For more information, find us on the web at oursavior-lcms.org. That's oursavior-lcms.org.
Confessional Lutherans are invited to rent a 4-bedroom, 3-bath Table Rock lakefront home in the Ozarks. Table Rock Lake is a premier lake in the heart of the Ozarks for boating, water sports, and fishing. This log cabin-style rental sleeps 12 and is 30 minutes from Branson and 20 minutes from Silver Dollar City. Learn more by calling Swanson Estates, 713-855-2681. Be sure to mention Issues Etc. 713-855-2681.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about building bridges and alliances during polarizing times. Joshua Pauling is our guest, author of a 2-part series for Modern Reformation, titled Building Bridges to the Parallel Polis. So, Josh, what are some of the potential pitfalls of bridge building between right and left realists?
So when we think about these individuals who have some common cause, there's also places where this breaks down, right? There is going to be significant differences between a Christian and secular realism, if you will. Working together on certain matters might be counterproductive because of competing worldview assumptions. And so we as Christians need to navigate this carefully. We want to work together where we can, but also not lose out on the distinctives of the Christian message. So in our attempts to defend objectivity and rationality as universal human tools, what I called realism earlier, Christians need to do more than just push for a return to that, right? When we fight against wokeness or progressivism, we don't just want to go back to modernity. We have something different from modern liberalism. We also have something different from postmodern wokeism. And we also have something different from the far right as well. We have a distinctly Christian message. And so the potential pitfalls I see in this regard come really to two main issues. One is that many of these voices from the left, that are I'm calling realists look, I think, too much to secular liberalism as a solution to everything. That if we just were rational, if we just looked to the scientific method, we'd fix all our problems. And I think that's a bit short-sighted, especially thinking through the fact that scientists can be biased and rationality can leave certain things off the table, like revelation, which would be an important category for Christians, obviously. So that could break down there a little bit. Also, I think classical liberalism itself has some holes in it, which we may talk about here in a little bit.
In that vein, why is a return to classical liberalism simply inadequate for the Christian?
Yeah, so this is something that a lot of ink has been spilled on recently, and certainly a lot of different things to consider. But I think Patrick Deneen, in his book, Why Liberalism Failed, has an important insight to offer. And basically, he explains or argues, his thesis is that liberalism itself is unsustainable without an underlying order to things, without, say, a transcendent God, or without the limits of faith, family, and community. So liberalism, even though it's accomplished many good things in the world, it's got what we might say a flaw in it. And that's that it places the individual at the center of everything. The liberated individual is the center. And you could make a case that this sort of leads us to where we're at today in sort of an ironic way. So if we think about liberalism, yes, it's accomplished many good things, but it puts at the center the liberated individual. So instead of the older idea, which would have been before, that the self is interconnected to others in sort of a web of support, and that was all God's design, instead of that picture, where an individual is within that order and structure, instead, liberalism puts forward that the self is really self-determining, free from duties and responsibilities to others, with unbounded choice and no structures external to the self to frame meaningful action in the world. So I think that's really something that we need to consider, that liberalism itself does have perhaps a flaw from a Christian perspective.
Is the current state of political affairs in the United States an unintended result of classical liberalism?
This has been a hotly debated question in the last few years amongst many conservative intellectuals and Christians. And so I am not going to venture to be the expert on the final conclusion on that. But I will say that some of the voices here have argued something similar, and Deneen would be one of those. But he's not the only one to consider. This issue has been debated between David French and Sarab Amari, amongst others. So there are many people considering this right now. Where do we go from here, basically, is the question. Is the goal to return to classical liberalism, or is the goal something else? Is liberalism ultimately flawed in some way? So there are many people discussing this and writing about it and having debates about it. So something to follow for sure.
Where is the parallel polis already at work?
So this concept of the parallel polis, which I used to frame the article, which really comes from those Cold War thinkers, we already see things in our own lives and culture where we have alternatives to the mainstream choices. For example, when individuals make different educational choices, that's sort of the parallel polis at work. We see this with an increase in homeschooling, the rapid growth of classical education, colleges that try to stay independent from government bureaucracy by refusing to take federal funding. We see this with some of those organizations I mentioned before in the realm of education that are trying to form alliances that might not go along with the mainstream progressive narratives that are unfolding. We also see this, we might say, economically too, with the last year, with all of the economic uncertainty and disruptions caused by a global pandemic, some people are really thinking through their economic lives and how to balance family and work. And some are charting a new course economically to maybe be self-employed or create a business. And so I think we're at a moment right now where there are glimmers of hope, where people are thinking through these things, whether they're Christians or not. We need to really think through how we can harness this and not just be against things as Christians, but also think about what are we for, right? I think sometimes Christianity easily comes across in the broader culture as sort of just like a just say no ethic, right? That if we just say no to this and we just say no to this, but there's never a bigger picture of what are we actually for? And that's where this idea of the parallel polis, I think, can help us, that we need to provide viable alternatives and a picture of what a meaningful life looks like, where there's human flourishing, where there's family, where there's community, and all of those things that will sustain us far beyond wokeness or far beyond the far right as well. Both sides ultimately fail, and we have something better to offer. So I think we have things to learn from people on the left and the right. And ultimately, the Christian message is the truth, and it's one that can sustain us through these times, no matter what these times will be like.
Josh Pauling is a high school history teacher. He's elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and author of a two-part series for Modern Reformation titled Building Bridges to the Parallel Polis. You can read these columns on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Josh, thanks.
Good to be with you again.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., this Tuesday afternoon, May the 11th, we'll be talking about the blessing of same-sex couples by more than 100 Roman Catholic parishes in Germany with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. Then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on King Josiah in 2 Kings 22 with Pastor Tom Baker.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.